I want you to picture a scene that I think pretty much every homeowner dreads, even if they don't exactly know it yet.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing a little light remodeling, maybe painting a room or swapping out those old yellowed outlets for nice, crisp white ones.
Yeah.
So you unscrew the faceplate, you pull the receptacle out of the wall, and that's when it hits you.
The smell.
The smell.
Yeah.
That super faint, kind of acrid scent of hot plastic.
It's unmistakable once you know it.
Right. And when you look closer at the wiring in the box, the insulation is actually darkened. And those little terminal screws holding the wires are just slightly loose.
Wow, yeah.
Not burned down, but it's definitely cooked.
That is honestly a terrifying moment.
Oh,
because
yeah.
What you're looking at there isn't just a dirty old outlet. You're looking at a house fire that, well, it just hasn't quite finished starting yet.
Exactly. And that exact scenario is the turning point mentioned in the material we're covering today for this deep dive.
It's a great piece of source material.
It really is. We're looking at this very detailed firsthand account from a DIYer who had this exact experience. And they realized that their whole understanding of electrical safety was just totally incomplete.
Which is super common, honestly.
Yeah, and I think most of us, honestly, we just thought electrical fires were all about overloading a circuit.
Right, like plugging in 3 space heaters into one power strip.
Right, and then pop, the breaker trips to save the day.
Yeah, that's the classic overcurrent model. But the scary reality, and what the source gets into, is that a lot of electrical fires don't start because of too much power.
Yeah.
No, they start because of bad power behavior. They start from Arling.
And that brings us to the actual mission of our deep dive today. We're unpacking the specific technology that is designed to stop that exact hidden danger.
The AFCI.
Yes, the arc fault circuit interrupter. We're going to use this DIR's very honest mistakes and fixes log, and we'll also layer in some technical definitions from UL Solutions and the CPSC.
It really helps to understand what's actually happening inside that breaker box.
Right. So let's just start with the absolute basics. What exactly is an AFCI? Because I know a lot of people walk down the electrical aisle at the hardware store and they see a standard breaker for like $7.
Yeah.
And right next to it is the AFCI version for $50 or $60. And they just think, oh, that's just a fancy brand name or a premium version.
It's definitely not just a branding exercise. It is a completely different mechanism.
How so?
Well, to understand it, you really have to look at what a standard breaker actually does. A standard breaker is a thermomagnetic device. Its logic is incredibly simple. It basically just asks, is there too much current flowing through this wire?
Okay, so it's kind of like it's like a bouncer at a club who only cares about capacity.
Precisely. That is a perfect analogy.
Too many people. Shut the door.
Exactly. That bouncer knows the room holds exactly 100 people. If the 101st person tries to push their way in, the bouncer shuts the door. That is overcurrent protection. If you have a wire in your wall rated for 15 amps and you try to pull 20 amps through it, the breaker gets hot, there's a little bimetal strip inside that physically bends from the heat and snaps.
It trips.
It trips to physically stop that wire from melting inside your wall.
Okay, but here's the massive gap in that protection, right?
Go ahead.
What if I have a loose wire that is sparking and sizzling away inside the wall?
Yeah.
It's generating a ton of heat. I mean, enough to melt plastic or ignite the wood stud, but it's only drawing maybe 5 amps.
That is exactly where the standard breaker fails. Go back to your bouncer analogy. The bouncer at the door sees 5 people walk in.
Right, way under capacity.
Exactly. He doesn't care that one of those 5 people is standing in the corner lighting off fireworks. He just cares about the head count.
Wow, okay. That paints a picture.
A standard breaker simply cannot see a low current fire hazard. Period.
And that is exactly where the AFCI steps in. The source used a great mental model for this that I want to bring up.
What was that?
They said, overcurrent protection stops too much electricity, but arc fault protection stops bad electricity behavior.
That is the absolute best way to frame it. An AFCI is not looking for the quantity of current, it's looking for the quality of the current.
It operates on entirely different physics.
It really does.
So let's define that bad behavior. What is an arc fault, physically speaking? Because the word arcing kind of sounds like something from a Frankenstein movie.
It does sound a bit sci-fi. Physically, an arc fault is an unintended high-energy discharge.
Okay.
It is literal electricity jumping through the air or jumping across a compromised connection. You can think of it like a miniature lightning bolt happening inside your drywall.
Yikes.
Yeah. And the source actually breaks this down into 2 types that are really helpful for listeners to visualize.
Right. Series and parallel.
Yes. Let's start with series arcing.
Okay, series arcing. This is the one that really freaks me out because it just seems so incredibly hard to detect.
It is incredibly hard. Imagine that loose terminal screw on the outlet we talked about at the very beginning.
The one with the hot plastic smell.
Exactly. The wire is touching the screw, but barely. Maybe someone walks by and the floorboards vibrate, so the wire moves away a millimeter, then touches again.
Or maybe the copper inside the wire is actually broken, but still inside the plastic insulation.
Yes, that happens a lot. And for the circuit to keep going, to keep powering your lamp or your TV, the electricity actually has to jump that tiny gap.
So the device plugged in might actually still be working.
Oh, absolutely. The lamp might flicker a tiny bit, or it might stay on completely normally. You wouldn't even know.
That is crazy.
But every single time the electricity jumps that gap, it reaches incredible temperatures.
Yeah.
We're talking thousands of degrees at a microscopic level.
But it's not pulling a lot of power.
No. And this is the key. Because there is a gap, the electrical resistance is very high. High resistance means lower current.
So your standard breaker sees like 5 amps flowing and thinks everything is peachy.
Yes. While the terminal behind your wall is literally melting into slag.
Okay, that is terrifying. And then there's the second type, parallel arcing.
Right. Parallel arcing is when the electricity jumps between two completely different wires that should never be touching.
Give me an example of that.
Sure. Say you drive a nail into the wall to hang a picture, and you accidentally nick the Ronex wire behind the drywall.
Oh, man. I always worry about doing that.
We all do. If that nail damages the insulation, it allows the hot line to arc over to the neutral line or to the bare ground wire.
Isn't that just a short circuit, though?
It is, but it can be a really intermittent one. It sparks, it burns some of the plastic insulation to carbon, and essentially creates a little heating element right there inside your wall.
And again, if the spark is fast enough, the old standard breaker just sleeps right through it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it still starts a fire.
Okay, so we've got these mini lightning bolts happening in the wall. The standard breaker is asleep at the wheel. How on earth does the AFCI actually see this? The source mentions something about waveforms, which again sounds very technical.
It is technical. It's actually pretty advanced computing.
Computing? Inside a breaker?
Yes. An AFCI isn't just a mechanical switch with a spring. It actually has a microchip inside it.
Wow.
And that chip is constantly monitoring the waveform of the electricity passing through it.
When we say waveform, we're talking about the sine wave, right? That smooth up and down rhythm of alternating current.
Correct. In a healthy electrical circuit, that wave is perfectly smooth and predictable. It looks like rolling hills.
Okay.
But when an arc fault happens, that chaotic sparking we talked about, It totally messes up that smooth wave. It creates electrical noise on the line. It distorts the wave so it looks jagged and erratic.
So the smart breaker is basically sitting in the panel, constantly analyzing the vibe of the electricity?
Essentially, yes. The Consumer Product Safety Commission explains it as amplitude plus duration logic.
Amplitude plus duration.
Right. The computer in the breaker is constantly asking, is this spike in power messy? And did it last long enough to look like a dangerous arc?
It's looking for a specific signature of chaos.
Beautifully put, yes.
But wait a second. Electricity involves sparks normally sometimes, right?
It does.
Like if I plug in my old vacuum cleaner while the switch is accidentally left on, I might actually see a little blue spark right at the outlet.
Or flipping an old heavy-duty light switch.
Exactly. So why doesn't the AFCI breaker trip every single time I turn on the lights or vacuum the rug?
Now, you've hit on the million-dollar engineering challenge. The source calls this the picky nature of ASCIs.
Picky?
Yes. Oop. The device has to constantly distinguish between a normal arc and an abnormal arc.
So a normal arc is the vacuum motor.
Right. The carbon brushes inside a vacuum motor create arcs by design. Mm-hmm. Flipping a switch creates an arc. The breaker has to know those are okay.
And the abnormal arc is the frayed wire behind the drywall.
Exactly.
So it literally has a library of okay sparks and bad sparks programmed into it.
Basically. The algorithm knows that a motor starting up has a very specific repeatable arc signature. But a loose wire arcing in a wall looks totally different. It's random. It's sporadic.
But I imagine teaching a tiny computer the difference between a vacuum cleaner and a house fire is pretty tough.
It is really hard. And this is exactly why early AFCIs had a terrible reputation for being annoying.
Oh, I remember hearing horror stories about the early versions. You'd turn on a treadmill and half the house would go dark.
Yep. Nuisance tripping.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology has matured massively since the early 2000s. The algorithms are so much better now.
And the source mentioned that when these modern ones do trip, they actually give you a clue. It's not just a guessing game anymore.
Yes, the LED indicators.
Right.
Many modern AFCI breakers have what they call time saver diagnostics. If it trips, you go down to the panel, turn it back on, and it blinks a little light code at you.
That's brilliant.
It is. It might blink a pattern that tells you, hey, I tripped because of a dangerous arc fault, versus, hey, I tripped because you ran the microwave and the toaster at the same time.
That is a huge help for someone trying to figure out what went wrong.
It changes the whole troubleshooting game.
Okay, so we know what they are. We know they're basically little computers watching for fire signatures. Now we have to eat our vegetables for a minute.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about the electrical code, because let's be real, the reason a lot of people are installing these isn't just pure altruism, it's because the electrical inspector looked at their panel and said they had to.
True.
Yeah.
You have to follow the National Electrical Code, the NEC. That's the rule book.
Right.
And if you look at the history of the NEC regarding these breakers, you see a very clear trend toward making them mandatory everywhere.
It started just with bedrooms, didn't it?
It did. The 1999 NEC introduced the requirement, which went into effect in January 2002, specifically for bedroom circuits.
Which makes sense.
The logic was pretty morbid, honestly, but very sound. You are at your most vulnerable when you are asleep.
If a fire starts in the bedroom wall at 2 in the morning, you aren't going to smell the smoke in time.
Exactly. The AFCI stops the fire before the smoke even exists.
But they didn't just leave it at bedrooms.
No, the technology proved itself. So by the 2008 code cycle, they expanded the rule to family rooms, dining rooms, living rooms, basically anywhere you hang out in the house.
And then they expanded it again.
Right. In 2014, they added kitchens and laundry areas.
So at this point, if you are touching a circuit in a house, there is a very good chance it needs an AFCI breaker.
Which is exactly the living space rule that the author of our source material adopted for their DIY project.
Yeah, their personal rule was, if I am modifying a circuit in a living space, a hallway, a bedroom, a kitchen, I am just going to treat AFCI as the default requirement. No arguments.
It's the safest way to approach modern wiring.
Now, I want to clear up one piece of alphabet soup that I know always confuses me and probably confuses a lot of people listening.
AFCI versus GFCI.
Yes. They sound practically identical. They look similar in the panel. They both have those little test buttons on them. Are they just interchangeable?
No. Emphatically, no. This is critical to understand. They protect against two completely different enemies.
Okay, break it down for me.
We just spent the last 10 minutes establishing that an AFCI protects against fire caused by arcing.
Fire, got it.
A GFCI, which stands for ground fault circuit interrupter, protects against shock.
Okay. Shock versus fire.
Exactly. A GFCI is basically counting the electrons going out on the hot wire and returning on the neutral wire. If even a tiny fraction of an amp goes missing, the GFCI assumes that electricity is leaking out somewhere it shouldn't be.
Like leaking through a person standing in a puddle of water while holding a hairdryer.
Precisely. The GFCI trips instantly to prevent electrocution. The AFCI trips to prevent the house from burning down.
Okay, but you mentioned kitchens and laundry rooms a minute ago. Those are wet places. Don't they need GFCI protection by law?
They absolutely do.
So wait, the modern clad requires both protections in the kitchen. You need to not get shocked, and you need the wall not to catch fire.
Yes, you need both.
So do you have to wire two separate breakers in series or something crazy?
Thankfully, no. Manufacturers make dual function breakers now. It's a single device that does both jobs. It monitors for arcing, and it monitors for ground faults.
Oh, nice.
It is the ultimate safety upgrade. But it's also exactly why understanding what you are buying at the hardware store is so important. You can't just blindly grab the first expensive breaker you see.
That makes total sense. All right, let's move into the hands-on part of this. Our source is a DIYer who actually tackled a panel upgrade.
Yes.
And I really loved the honesty in this account. They didn't just come on the internet and say, oh, I slapped it in, it was super easy, everything is great.
They definitely showed their work.
They spent a ton of time talking about the boring stuff that actually ended up saving the whole project.
The preparation phase.
Yeah.
This is honestly where most DIY electrical projects completely fail.
Yeah. The author really emphasized labeling. Before you unscrew a single wire, you need a map. If you don't know which wire goes to the guest bedroom and which goes to the kitchen fridge, you are in for an absolute nightmare.
And with AFCI breakers, the wiring map matters even more than usual.
Why is that? Because of the neutral wires.
Exactly. With an old standard breaker, you can sometimes get away with really sloppy neutral wiring in the panel.
Yeah.
But remember, AFCIs are computers monitoring the flow out and the flow coming back.
Right.
If you have what's called shared neutrals, where two different circuits share one return wire, the AFCI will see that as a fault and it will trip instantly.
So mapping the circuits and finding those shared neutrals is just non-negotiable.
Absolutely non-negotiable.
And then there was the tool talk. The author bought a Torx screwdriver. I will be totally honest with you. When I do stuff around the house, I usually just twist the screwdriver until my wrist clicks.
And that right there is incredibly dangerous with electrical work.
I'm learning that now.
The source was adamant about this. They said, tight enough is not a spec.
Right?
Breakers have very specific torque requirements from the manufacturer, usually measured in inch pounds. If you leave it too loose, you get arcing.
Which ironically causes the exact fire problem you were buying the breaker to prevent.
Exactly. But if you crank it down too tight, you literally crush the copper wire, damage the connection, and cause high resistance. You need a Torx screwdriver.
Okay, duly noted. Another big prep step the DIR took was going around the house and getting rid of backstabbed receptacles.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that means for listeners who haven't taken an outlet apart before?
Sure. On the back of cheap contractor-grade outlets,
yeah. You
know, the 99-cent ones, there are these little holes where you can just strip the wire and poke it straight in.
Right, instead of wrapping it around the side screw.
Yeah. The wire is just held in place by a tiny spring tension clamp inside the plastic.
It seems super fast.
It is incredibly fast for a builder trying to finish a house. But think about the physics over time. Every single time you plug a vacuum or a heater into that outlet, the metal inside heats up a tiny bit.
And when things heat up, they expand.
Exactly. And when you unplug it, it cools and contracts. Expand, contract.
Yeah.
Over years.
And eventually, that little tiny spring just gives up.
It does. The grip weakens. And a loose grip means micro-arcing.
And micro-arcing trips your brand new $60 AFCI breaker.
Constantly. So the author was super smart. They went around the house and preemptively replaced all those sketchy push-in connections with proper secure screw terminals before they even install the new breakers.
That is definitely a pro move. It eliminates all those ghost trips before they even have a chance to happen.
It saves so much headache later.
One other thing they stressed during prep was compatibility. You can't just buy any brand of AFCI breaker and stick it in your panel.
No, absolutely not. You have to stay within your panel's ecosystem.
Ecosystem.
Right. If you have a Square D electrical panel, you need to buy Square D breakers. If you have a Siemens panel, you use Siemens.
What happens if you mix them?
It's a huge safety risk. The bus bar, that's the heavy metal strip down the middle of the panel that the breakers actually clip onto, is shaped slightly differently for every single brand.
So even if you can physically force a different brand to click in,
you shouldn't do it. It won't make a perfect connection, and again, you risk arcing right there in the panel.
Okay, so the author does all this meticulous prep. They map the labels, they torque the screws, they fix the bad outlets, they buy the right brand. Then finally comes install day.
The actual execution.
Yeah. Main power off, and they verified it was off with a meter, not just guessing.
Crucial step.
They removed the dead front cover, and then they talked about landing the neutral wire. With standard breakers, you just shove the neutral onto the bus bar anywhere it fits.
But with AFCIs, because they have that computer brain inside, they usually have a pigtail wire or a specific neutral lug right on the breaker itself.
Right, you have to complete the entire circuit through the breaker so it can monitor the complete flow of the waveform.
Exactly.
And then, the moment of truth. They flipped the main back on, and they had what they called the cautious victory coffee when the first circuit actually held and didn't trip.
Nothing beats that feeling.
But, and this is the best part of the story, the victory did not last forever.
No, it rarely does. And this leads us right into the final phase of their project, which they called the humility arc.
The humility arc. I love this part because it is just so painfully relatable. So it's day two. They're vacuuming the living room. Everything is great. The house is clean. And then, click, the power goes out.
The dreaded nuisance trip.
Yeah.
And this right here is exactly where most people just give up completely. They get frustrated. They think this AFCI junk is way too sensitive. I'm taking it out and putting the old breaker back in.
The author totally admits their very first thought was, oh man, my house wiring is just doomed.
Sure.
But then they took a breath and they shifted their mindset. They decided to troubleshoot like a technician.
Which is the only way to do it.
So what was their actual protocol when the breaker tripped?
It was very methodical. It's all about isolating the variables.
Yeah.
Step one, unplug absolutely everything on that specific circuit.
Yeah.
Every lamp, every phone charger, the television, everything.
Strip it bare.
Right. Step two, go down and reset the breaker. If the breaker holds with nothing plugged in, you know the actual copper wiring hidden inside your walls is likely okay.
Okay, and step three.
Go back upstairs and plug things back in one by one. Turn the first lamp on. Wait. Turn the TV on. Wait.
Divide and conquer.
Exactly. You're systematically trying to find the culprit that's angering the computer.
And the author kept a trip cause chart. What were the main culprits they found?
Well, the vacuum cleaner was definitely one of them.
Because of the motor.
Yeah. Old brush motors naturally create a ton of sparks inside the housing as they spin. Sometimes an older AFCI or even a newer one dealing with a really badly worn out motor just doesn't get along with it.
What else?
Another big one was cheap LED dimmer switches.
Really? Dimmers?
Yeah, chip dimmers actually work by chopping up the electrical waveform super fast. To an AFCI, that chopped up wave can look exactly like a dangerous arc.
That is fascinating. So if you buy bargain bin dimmers, you're going to be walking to the basement a lot.
Exactly. Swap them for high quality, name brand dimmers, and the problem usually vanishes.
But then in their chart, there was the scary one. The trip that wasn't caused by a vacuum cleaner and wasn't a cheap dimmer switch.
Ah, yes. This is the absolute vindication moment for the whole project.
Totally.
They had one breaker that just kept tripping. They used the protocol, traced it down, and isolated it to one specific receptacle hidden behind a heavy bookshelf.
Oh, wow.
When they finally pulled that bookshelf away and opened up the outlet, they found a completely loose screw terminal.
A real arc of fault.
A very real one.
Mm-hmm.
The copper wire was literally scorched black.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't a nuisance trip at all. It was a warning shot.
And the old standard breaker they had in there the week before was just completely ignoring it.
Just letting it burn. The AFCI detected it perfectly.
That is the whole lesson, isn't it? The author said that specific trip proved to them that the AFCI wasn't just being annoying. It was being incredibly useful. It literally detected a fire hazard hiding behind a bookshelf.
Exactly. It forces a reckoning with the actual physical quality of your home's wiring.
So how do they fix it?
Simple. They cut off the scorched copper, stripped fresh wire, re-terminated the receptacle properly with their Torx screwdriver, and the tripping stopped completely.
So after the initial panic and all the troubleshooting, the author's final conclusion on AFCIs was pretty positive.
It was overwhelmingly positive. They called it a humility art, sure, but they concluded that if they had to do it all over again, they would do it even sooner.
Did they offer any retrospective advice for someone else about to try this?
They did. Two big things. First, replace your weak devices before you start. If you know you have loose, floppy outlets where plugs fall out, fix those before you put in the sensitive breakers.
Because the breaker will find them anyway.
Right. And second, upgrade your panel in phases. Don't go down there and swap out 20 breakers on a Saturday afternoon, or you will be troubleshooting the entire house in the dark.
That makes perfect sense. Do one circuit, live with it for a week, make sure it's stable, then move to the next.
It keeps the troubleshooting so much simpler. If the breaker trips on Tuesday, you know it's related to the exact circuit you just touched on Monday. So let's wrap this deep dive up. If we pull back and look at the big picture, what is the main takeaway for someone listening right now who is maybe side-eyeing their own fuse box? The main takeaway is that an AFCI breaker is not just some annoying code requirement invented to make your life difficult. It is a fundamental shift in how we handle home safety.
Moving from preventing melted wires to preventing the spark entirely.
Exactly. It's moving from a brute force approach to a smart behavior monitor for your electricity.
It really is the difference between a smoke detector and a fire preventer.
In a way, yeah. A smoke detector only goes off when the fire is already happening. An AFCI trips to tell you the fire is trying to start. And while the installation absolutely requires care, you cannot be sloppy with these things, the payoff is a house that is actively watching out for you.
I really, really liked the author's final thought on this in the source material. They said that while nuisance trips are incredibly annoying, they are actually a form of communication.
That is such a provocative thought to leave on.
It really is.
If you install an AFCI and it keeps tripping every single day, it is so easy to get angry at the plastic box. It's easy to blame the technology.
Right, curse the computer.
But you have to stop and ask yourself the really hard question. Is the breaker broken? Or is your house actively trying to tell you that it's burning?
That is a chilling but super important perspective to have. If the breaker keeps popping, maybe just listen to what it's saying.
Absolutely. The inconvenience of resetting a breaker is infinitely better than the alternative.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to go home, pull out my Torx screwdriver, and check a few outlets. Thanks for walking us through this deep dive.
Anytime. Stay safe out there.
And to you, the listener, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.